Welcome back to Disrupting the Music Biz, the only podcast that covers everything independent artists need to succeed in the music business today. Angelo here, VP of Zed Records. We have a truly incredible guest on for this episode, super producer and songwriter Rob Wells. Rob is an award-winning producer-songwriter based in Toronto, and his list of credits is a who's who's of the music business, including superstar artists like everybody's favorite pop sensation, Justin Bieber, Adam Lambert, who is now on tour as the singer for Queen's comeback tour, and several others, including Cyndi Lauper, Selena Gomez, Backstreet Boys, Mika, and many more. His work has appeared in major release films, network TV shows, and video games worldwide. Rob has appeared as a music producer on EI's House of Carters and YTV's The Next Star. Awards include first place in numerous songwriting competitions, SOCAN No. 1 awards, gold, platinum, and multi-platinum certifications. We're going to be picking Rob's brain today about what makes him tick with indie artists and his approach to songwriting in general and how he tries to make a hit song. So thanks for being here, Rob.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
And of course, we also have president of Zed Records and producer-songwriter Mark Zubek. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Hey, everybody.
And I'm Angelo Dodaro, vice president of Zed Records. If you don't already have our free ebook, The Indie Artist's Guide to a Successful Music Career, make sure you go to zedrecords.com to get it right away and flip to page 6 and 7, as there will be a lot of relevant content in there to the discussion today. There's 25 questions you're going to have to ask yourself to determine if your songs are hit quality. So make sure you have the PDF to follow along. So that's at zedrecords.com, Z-E-D-D, records.com. Just look straight on the homepage and you'll see a slider with the image of the ebook, and you can click that and it'll bring you to a form that will deliver the ebook directly to your inbox instantly. And if you enjoy this interview with Rob Wells, you'll actually have your chance to have him critique your song live at a very special workshop coming up on December 7th here in downtown Toronto on a Saturday. We'll have the details posted on the Zed Records blog. And if you enter the discount code PODCAST at the checkout, you'll get $25 off either a VIP ticket or a regular ticket. And if you purchase your ticket before October 25th, you're also going to get free access to our social media workshop, How to Triple Your Fan Base in 90 Days, and that's actually coming up on October 18th. So lots of details. All of that's going to be on the blog in the show notes for this episode, so you can find it there, zedrecords.com. So with that, Rob, tell me some of the things that you're looking for in an indie artist when deciding if you're going to co-write or produce a track for them.
So, you know, when I leave the house every morning, I really try to make it so that I'm really excited about what it is that I'm working on, that I'm really looking forward to musically what's happening during the day, or else I kind of don't really want to leave home. You know, there's a lot of things that I could be doing at home. I could be mowing the lawn. I could be shoveling the driveway. Who knows? Whatever. Getting groceries. But I just really, really want to be excited by everything that I'm doing. Otherwise, there's really no point. And when I'm approached by an indie artist, I totally listen to everything that's being submitted to me, because you never know what you're going to find down the road. So I, first of all, listen to everything that's being submitted. I check it out. If I like it, then I, you know, can totally see myself diving into a project like that. But then it's really important for me as well to get to know the indie artist as well. So there might be a moment where I get together for a lunch or a coffee or something and just sit down and just really pick their brain, ask them a lot of questions to see how driven they are, see what they have going on, see if they have a bit of a team around them, if they have a bit of a buzz going around them. All these different factors go into play before I finally jump into working with someone. And, you know, I definitely don't want to jump into anything if I feel like I can't help them in any sort of way. If I feel like it's completely not my style of music or not my vibe in any sort of way, then I'll be very honest and upfront and just say, you know, I think that there's other people who would be better suited to doing what you're doing.
Right, right. I'm interested, when you said that there's some specific questions that you ask them, obviously, you know, you're trying to see if you're a right fit for each other, but you also want to see if, you know, they're at a specific point in their career where they're ready for this sort of thing. I know a lot of artists lack clarity and kind of what their goal is or their objective is in their career. What are some of the questions that you ask them to deduce that? What are you trying to figure out exactly?
Well, you know, basically one of the big things that I'm really trying to figure out is, do they wake up every day thinking about music? Do they go to bed at night every day, or every night, sorry, thinking about music? Like, are they just constantly thinking about the craft of music and them creating music and them performing music? Or, you know, I really want to get down to that. Is that really what's in their heart? Or do they like the whole sort of pizzazz and flash that goes along with the music industry, where there's, you know, life at the party and red carpets and all that sort of thing? And if that's sort of what they're looking for, then I shy away very, very quickly. So my questions will definitely lead towards that. It's just, you know, how badly do you want this? How hungry are you? How driven are you? It's just, for me, there's those three magical things that you need in order to really progress in anything in life, especially the music industry. You need to have a great personality. You need to have crazy amounts of drive, and you need to have crazy amounts of talent. And I think those three things will help propel you into anything that you're going to be diving into. So those questions that I'm asking will definitely, you know, lead to that big overall answer that I'm looking for at the end.
Hey, Rob, it's Mark here. I was going to ask you about that, because I work with a lot of indie artists myself. I'm a songwriter, producer. I work mostly with indie artists. And, you know, I ask them that kind of question, you know, how driven are you? And, you know, I tell people, if you can spend, like, you know, a few hours a week on your career and on the business side of things, not just your music, you know, you can take yourself far in today's kind of climate. And everyone always has the same answer, you know, yeah, I'm willing to do it. Yeah, I'm willing to do it. But a lot of them kind of fall short. Do you have any kind of screening process to sort of see where they're really at? Or is that your experience too? Or?
You know, definitely I've run into that. But when I look somebody in the eyes and they're looking back and telling me that they're extremely driven, I, you know, will ask them, how are you driven? Like, tell me what it is that you've done. What, you know, take me through your life story. Take me through your process. Take me through what's an average day to day for you. You know, there's ways to sort of to weed that out. And I think I'm a pretty good judge of character. There's a couple of times where I've been wrong, definitely along the way, but by and large, I'm pretty good at figuring out whether the person is a right fit or not, personality wise with working with me.
In my experience, I've noticed a lot of people fall into two categories. There's the people who are truly obsessed with music and just want to be the best that they can, whether it's at songwriting or playing guitar or drums or whatever it is. And then there is, you mentioned, there's people who are more enticed by, you know, the pizzazz or the fame aspect of it. There's people who are more drawn to that than the actual music aspect of it. Would you agree that with that?
Yeah, I think that there's that, but then there's also, I think there's something else that's kind of in between as well, which is also kind of cool to dive into, is those that really want to emotionally connect with other people. And that is really important as well. Like, I think that there's, you know, the interest in creating music and creating great music, that there's a lot of people out there like that. But then when you take it to the extra step where you want to take that music and you want to have it go out there into the world and you want to have it be represented and connect with people emotionally and really make a difference in somebody's life, I think that's a really important thing as well to look for, you know. But if it's just for being the life of the party and going to the party and red carpet and all that stuff, it's just that's totally the wrong reason.
And that's really what songwriting is all about, isn't it? It's about, like, you know, it's a form of communication. It's about getting your message out there to people and connecting with them on this emotional level.
It sure is. You know, my brother Greg and I, we were both sons of a minister, and my grandfather was a minister as well. And when we were growing up, you know, all the old ladies in the congregation would be pinching our cheeks and saying, you know, oh, are you going to follow in your father's footsteps? And, sorry, that's my best old lady voice right there. But they would just say, you know, are you going to follow into your father's footsteps? And we'd be like, hell no, we have no interest in doing that. But in kind of a weird way, we're both songwriters now, and we are kind of making, in our own weird way, little 3.5-minute sermons that are going out into the world and, you know, trying to affect people in one way or another. And so, you know, for me, it's all about communication and emotionally connecting as well as a songwriter. And for me, one of the best compliments that I could ever receive is when somebody comes up to me and says, you know, that song that you wrote, really helped me get through a very, very tough time in my life, whether it's a bad breakup or a death in the family or whatever it may be. And that, to me, is the whole reason why I'm doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, that brings us to ask you, like, what are the elements of that hit song that are going to, you know, evoke those kind of emotional responses out of people? And
you're basically just talking about how to create a hit song? I mean, if I had that answer, I would be, a multi-billionaire right now. But we try every day to write a hit song, and sometimes it works, sometimes we come close, sometimes it takes another avenue. It's all organic. There's no real way to say, I'm going to make a hit song at the end of the day. You know, you try your best, and whatever happens, happens. But my whole process with writing songs, when I get together with someone, I always co-write. I never, ever write a song by myself. I think there's real magic in co-writing. So I'll get together with whoever it is that I'm writing with and basically just shoot the breeze for the first hour, maybe even longer. You know, maybe go for a walk or just talk about what's going on in their life. And I find that somewhere in that conversation, you know, you can capture exactly what it is that you're going to be writing about during that day. It's whatever's happening there, whatever is sparking their interest, whatever movie it was that they watched last night, whatever's going through their head will come out in the song. And we'll say, oh my God, that's what you just said right there is a great title, or it's a great avenue for us to jump into the song. So already we're emotionally connecting, right? So it's happening there where we just feel like this is something that we can both identify with, we can latch onto it. Then the object is to take that lyrically and make it so that it's not so completely personal to the one artist who's singing the song, but make it more universal so that everybody around the whole planet can understand exactly what it is that you're trying to write about. And you just keep, you know, writing things back and forth, and what about this, what about that? And if it's moving you, if it's really, you know, reaching in and tearing your heart out, then you know you're kind of onto something good, and it probably will translate to other people where it is tearing their heart out as well, in a good or a bad way. So that's kind of it lyrically. And then just, you know, musically, just really trying to get the spirit and the vibe of the song, and trying to figure out what does this song require musically? Where, what direction will it go in? Are we playing major chords? Are we playing minor chords? Are we fast? Are we slow? What kind of sonic template are we using? All of these things just go in, and I just really, really try to check my emotional meter all the way, and just, you know, make sure that we're hitting all the right check marks.
So lyrically, then, you know, is it safe to say then it has to be relatable and has to have that universal aspect to it, so that, you know, more people can engage with that depending on where they are in their personal lives?
I really truly do believe in that. There's exceptions to the rule, of course. There's some very, very personal songs that are out there floating around in the universe, and they really work.
Right.
But I think to be a global number one hit, I think it's got to be something that just really speaks to everybody, and they can really, you know, buy into it and say, that's me. That's my song. That's our song. That's exactly what we're going through. I've been through there. I've done that, or I'm about to go through that, or whatever. It's really got to connect. That's what it's all about.
Do you think then, in your opinion, it's more of the songs, at least, that you've worked on that have been the most successful or had the most impact with listeners, have started from, you know, a lyrical idea that really hits you, like you're saying? Or do you sometimes also have like a really catchy groove and then write an idea after that? Or does it always come back and start with that lyrical edge?
There's so many ways to write a song. There's not one right way to write a song. For me, mm-hmm. though, what works always is to not touch any of the production until the song's pretty much written. I really want to make sure that the song works on a really stripped down level, whether it be guitar and vocal, piano and vocal, whatever, just the campfire test. If it's working, you can imagine singing this around a campfire and it works on all levels, then whatever you do in production land will totally work on top of that. I think that the hardest part of songwriting is definitely in the lyrics. And I really want to know lyrically where we're going first. I want to know what our final destination is. What's our title? What's our vibe? But then I've also been in other situations too where, you know, a lot of urban sessions that I do start out with creating the beat first before any lyrics are created. So I'm not in as many urban sessions as I am in pop sessions. I'm more of a pop writer. And I just find with pop that definitely we go from a lyrical standpoint first. We figure out what it is that we want to write about first before any sort of musical thing happens. I just find that once you have the lyric that the music really dictates, you know, or the lyric really dictates what you're going to do musically.
I'm interested to hear what you think is the most important skill to master to be great at songwriting. Obviously, you know, writing great songs, you know, is a skill in itself, but what are some of the micro skills inside of that that you feel really help to tune and fine tune one's ability to be a great songwriter?
That's a great question. I'm still trying to figure out what that is, you know, how to be a great songwriter. You're always learning no matter how great you become. I think one very important thing is being a great listener, really listening to, you know, for me, I'm always working for the artist. So I always have to listen to what the artist is saying and what they really want to say in their music and how they want to be represented. It's not my face that's going to be on the CD cover. It's the artist, you know, they're being fully represented. It's their name out there. So for me, being a songwriter, listening is really, really important, and it's just really understanding what it is that they want to do. And just, you know, there's so many other things that are equally important. Learning how to adapt or how to compromise is also very, very important. To walk into a songwriting session and just play. So for me, walking into a songwriting session and just saying, you know, here's the song and it's going to be like this and we're going to do my way. There's no point in doing that. You might as well just stay at home and completely do it all by yourself. So to be a great songwriter, to be a great collaborator, you have to listen, you have to be able to adapt, and also, you know, not be afraid to throw out crazy ideas. It's kind of like appearing naked in front of all your friends. It's just like you have to be totally open to that kind of level of trust and just, you know, throwing out stuff that just sounds absolutely crazy, but you never know what's going to fly. I've seen some of the most amazing songs happen from somebody who would say, you know what, I think this is the worst idea, but here it is. What do you think of this? And everyone's just like, God, that was genius.
That actually reminds me of the workshop we did last year. Mark, remember when Greg Norrie was talking about writing with Jacob from Headley and how there was like these three songs that they were trying to write a song together that day, and there was three songs that the label specifically said to him, you know, don't go with these songs because we don't want to go in that direction. And he felt really, and he could tell that he was holding something back, right? And he's like, well, do you have anything else? And he's like, well, I do have these couple songs that I was told very specifically not to share. And he was super reluctant to, and sure enough, those, I think they turned out to be three singles for Headley, big singles too.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's very cool, yeah.
No, I love that. I love that. You know, it's so funny. That's one thing that I definitely hated in my early stages of songwriting and trying to get into the music industry was just having people be gatekeepers of, you know, getting songs to the right artist, and you'd have to pass through so many different levels of people saying, it's not right, it's not right, it's not right. I had one situation like that. It was with Backstreet Boys where I tried this one song and we tried to make it happen, and everyone just kind of said, yeah, it's not right and it's not right. And then it got to the right person and they flipped out over it and presented it to Backstreet, and they were like, where did this song come from? We love this. And they recorded it and ended up on one of the records. And it's just, you know, it can be very frustrating, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right? Or in the ear of the beholder with music. It's everyone's got an opinion, and that's a great thing in the world too, but it's so important to really get your songs out there, and you know, one person's trash is another person's treasure.
Well, and holding on to that vision seems so important too, right? Because it's so easy to, you know, throw your stuff up on the internet and, you know, get really upset, or whatever the right word is, when you get that negative YouTube commenter that says, you know, you suck or whatever. The whole house of cards can come tumbling down for some artists, but really holding on to your vision and knowing what is true to you, there is people out there that can relate to that feeling that you're having. And if you have articulated it in a way that can be relatable in a universal sense, it's a matter of matching yourself up or that song with the right audience. And sometimes you have to have the door shut so many times, like the Beatles, for example. How many times did they get rejected before they actually got signed, right?
This business is a business of rejection. 99.999% rejection. And still to this day, I'm rejected 99% of the time. It's kind of like baseball. It's a game of numbers, you know. It's just like you get stuff out there and you get enough activity going on, and then eventually you can build a bit of a career out of this. But it's just, it's really what you do when that rejection happens. You know, do you get back up on your feet and try again, or do you let it affect you? And that the whole thing with YouTube, we're living in such a crazy age where there's so many people that are so brave behind a computer screen, and they'll say the craziest stuff that they would never, ever, ever say to anyone's face. It's really kind of sad sometimes, some of the comments. But I tell the artists that I work with all the time, like, you can't read that stuff and let it affect you. You can't read the good comments. You can't read the bad comments. Because it's all, if you start to really soak that in, it's going to play with your mind like you wouldn't believe. You know, before YouTube, it was reading newspaper articles and reviews. And, you know, when I first got started, one of my first major records that I worked on was for Ryan Malcolm, the winner of Canadian Idol. And I forget who it was, maybe somebody from the Toronto Star, but they were reviewing it, and they said that this record is like the biggest piece of crap, and it's been produced by a bunch of C-level Canadian producers. And when I read it, I was just like, wow.
That is ruthless.
Totally ruthless, but I kind of laughed at it. It was just, you know, I really get the fact that it's just one person's opinion, and it's totally cool. I've worked in a lot of other industries as well, but I did do computer animation for many years. And for me, that really, really set me up in a nice way to handle rejection. Because when you're doing art, when you're doing any form of art, especially animation, there would be clients that would come in. For example, I did this one thing for Bell Canada, and I worked, I think, 2 months on this one commercial, and it was this telephone cord that came popping out of the wall and started dancing around like a snake. And that was the creative directive that we got, and when we came through to show the client, they all came into the room. There was about 20, 30 people in there, and they're all loving it, loving it, loving it. And then as they're all leaving, after they've eaten a whole bunch of food and had a whole bunch of drinks, the last person to leave said, "Don't you think it kind of looks like a dragon?" And everybody came back in, and they were like, "What? Oh, you're right. It totally looks like a dragon. This is terrible. We can't do this." And the whole thing just got completely squashed. And back then, it was just, I was so furious. I'd spent so many late nights doing all these things. And just enough of those events really set me up to just really keep reminding myself, you know what? It's all good. Nobody's sick. Nobody's dying. It's all good. It's all good. You get back on me. I'll keep forging ahead.
Yeah. So the rejection thing, I'm actually interested. I want to hear just a little bit more about that. There must have been a few times where, you know, like in that Ryan Malcolm situation, did you ever think about giving it all up, or, you know, doing something drastic? Did it ever hit you that hard? Because I feel like so many artists, they can get chewed up and spit out so easily by that first rejection, or even the 100th rejection. You know, how did you move past that?
I think the reason why I didn't leave it and go into something else is because I can't. I really can't. It's, music is one of the few things in life that really makes absolute sense to me. And it's really the thing that really gives me one of the biggest charges in my life. I would do this completely for free. Don't tell record labels this, but I love it that much. And I remember being a kid just walking through the hallways of school, always tapping my leg and always thinking of a melody and writing songs in grade 9 and just like nonstop, just going forward with this. And so, you know, there's so many different ways that you can make a career at music. And when you're a songwriter, when you're behind the scenes, it's so much easier to make a career out of music than if you're an artist trying to make a career out of music, because you're putting all of your eggs in the one basket. So quite a lot of the time, I've always had about 10 different things going on. And, you know, out of those 10, it's amazing if two of them take off. That's, again, the business of rejection. Right. There's the things that don't fly, but then there's some things that do, and the ones that fly end up covering you for the rest of it. It's Yeah, the rejection's always going to be there. I love it too much. And I also understand and appreciate that everyone's got an opinion, and it really doesn't affect me anymore. I really, really try to tell everybody that I work with to just not let it affect you. Let it just, you know, in one ear and out the other, learn from it what you need to learn, but don't let it bring you down. Don't let it tear you down to the ground. Just stay high. Man, you never know when opportunity is going to come knocking on your door. And it could be the next time. It could be the very next time after that. You know, I don't suggest doing stuff like, you know, only focusing on music. If you have no other source of income and you're not making any income on music, that's really tough. There's bills to be paid.
Yeah.
I have a suggest, get yourself another gig, and all your other free time, all your waking moments where you're not doing that other gig, pour it into music. I completely did that for years and years and years. I worked at Bank of Nova Scotia. I worked at an animation facility, so many other jobs that I did. But I'd had evenings and weekends off, and I would just immediately head right back in. I'd pour whatever money it is that I made into buying gear and learning it, really learning everything from top to bottom, and just getting in and writing and then trying to find other people that were like-minded and who wanted to write with me and try writing this style, writing that style, just be open to anything and everything. And, you know, just spend every waking moment doing it, if that's truly what's in your heart.
What were the one or two revelations or milestones that really, like, changed everything? You know, was it co-writing with a certain person, or was it a song or an artist that you worked with that had a degree of success? Or what were the pivotal moments for you?
Well, I definitely learning how to co-write was a very pivotal moment. I look at the songs that I wrote before that, and they're just absolute heaps, massive stinking heaps of garbage. The moment that I started to co-write is when the greatest feeling came around, and just having somebody else to bounce ideas off of and just say, what about this? What about that? And then they'd recommend something, or they'd mention something. Wow, I never even thought about life that way or saw it in that, from that angle. And then, you know, bounces back to me, and then I'd say, what about this? And it's just this great game that just keeps elevating, elevating, elevating. So that was a massive revelation. And then I guess just finally getting into a situation where I found so many people that were very similar to me. I caught wind of a writing camp back in 2001, and I was 29 years old at that point. And I just thought, I have to do this. I'm hearing about this thing that's happening at Metalworks, where there's going to be 40 people all writing for this show called Pop Stars on global television. And how can I do this? How can I be a part of this? And I caught wind of who it was that was organizing. It was Justin Gray. Got his phone number, called him up, and said, I'm begging you. You don't know me. I've written songs my whole life. I produce. I do stuff, you know, very independently right now. But I program, and I will work my tail off in this camp. You won't be disappointed. And he basically said, I better not be disappointed. You're in. You better kick ass during this. And when I got in there and met everybody, I took a week's vacation from my animation gig and went to this thing. And just, I was so blown away and so floored, and just seeing the level of talent in there. And just, that was a huge, huge revelation for me, just being completely blown away by that.
You invested a lot then in your career before it went anywhere, like financially and time-wise, it sounds.
Yeah, well, when it's all you think about, maybe I'm sick, maybe I have a bit of a music disease, I don't know, but it's just, it's really all that goes on in my head, always has been from a really, really young age. And I just, you know, I knew that this is where I need to be, just how to get fully there and start making some serious dough at it was the big mystery.
What's the number one weakness you see holding most indie artists back today, and what advice would you give to fix that?
Great question. I think probably the number one weakness that I find with an indie artist is when I'm listening to their material and I'm looking at them and I'm hearing them and I'm kind of getting a vibe for what their personality is, and I'm listening to the music that they're doing and the two don't match. I think that's a major weakness. I think it really needs to be a complete package where you just really get it. Like, you are the music that you're doing. when it right. just feels really, really forced and really fake. It's just, somebody that should be doing something like Sarah McLachlan and they end up sounding like Skrillex, you know, like just whatever.
Right.
That's a major fault. You got to figure out what it is that you love to do and don't just be concerned about, oh, I got to get on the charts. I got to get this stuff released. I'm a big believer in just really following your heart musically, and it will be so good that people won't ignore it. Success will come if you really truly follow your heart and work hard. But I think if you're really trying to do something that you want, that will just shine through immediately.
I have a couple more questions here for you, and then we'll wrap it up. A lot of artists seem to get very aggressive with promoting themselves when they have perhaps average or even below average songs and demo quality recordings. Do you think that step one for a new artist is getting that amazing song and then getting that amazing recording of it? Or do you think that there is room to start the promo engine before that's up and going? Because in my mind, I've always thought it makes sense to fine tune your craft, get something that you have that people will be interested in, and then build that.
Well, I think, you know, in today's day and age, it's not just about the music. There's a whole visual component as well. And I think before you start really heavily promoting yourself, you really, first and foremost, got to figure out who you are and what the kind of music that you want to be doing and what represents you. And it's just, you know, in order for anyone to hang their hat on whatever you're doing, like, it has to be really well-defined. It has to be really, you know, just, okay, it's that. And just before you start promoting yourself, you've really got to figure that out, or else I think it will come crashing down. So once you get that sort of thing figured out, once you get the music figured out, then you figure out your visual look. You figure out how it is that you want to appear. Figure out graphically what's going on. Just all the bits and pieces of the puzzle, all of that. And then once you have that, then you really have to focus on the songs. And the songs have to be unbelievable. Whatever it is that they are, we're living in a singles market with music. You can't put out a record that has one amazing song and nine songs that blow completely. You have to have songs where every single song has to be so good and so amazing. Then I think once you have that, that's the moment where you start to make small moves and you start to go out and slightly promote and start to build a little bit of a buzz. And if you're good, if you're really good, that buzz will start to increase tenfold overnight. That's the moment that you start to aggressively, you know, get out there and say, hey, I've got this going on. I've got this amount of followers on this social media. I've got these amount of people coming out to my show. I've got this happening, that happening. That's the moment that you start, I think, aggressively getting out there. And that's the moment when labels will be interested, when they see, here's somebody who's really crazy driven, has already figured out their sound, has amazing songs. We love the way they look. They're already selling crazy amounts of merch. They have people coming to their show. That is kind of what you need, you know, in order to start being quite aggressive. But if you don't have your stuff figured out and your songs figured out and you're aggressively promoting yourself, no one's really going to listen.
Yeah. So do you think it's safe to say then if an artist that's listening to this has been really aggressively promoting themselves for a year or years and they haven't gotten that buzz, do you think that maybe the answer might be going back to the drawing board and seeing, is the songs that you're promoting and the package around that compelling people to find more about who you are and listen to these songs? Do you think it goes back to that again?
It might be completely going back to the drawing board, or it might be just going back just a couple of steps and changing one aspect of it.
Right.
You know, there's many different things. Like Guns N' Roses, weren't they a country band at one point?
I've never heard that before, actually.
I read that somewhere, that Guns N' Roses was a country band and never had anything happen until the moment that they flipped and completely found what it is that they truly need to be doing, and they just exploded, as we all know. You know, it's just finding the right angle. It's finding what really, really works for the dynamic of who you are, who your band is, all of that, and just having the greatest songs possible and then starting to build a buzz. And if you have all the stuff figured out, that buzz will happen so quickly, I believe.
That's interesting. You said something again that reminded me of something Greg Norrie said at the workshop last year, referring to, there's this documentary, it's like 16 or 19 minutes on YouTube of Sympathy for the Devil, the recording of Sympathy for the Devil by Rolling Stones. And they recorded so many different renditions of it, like every day for 2 weeks or something. They did it as a country song and then as a, you know, smooth jazz kind of vibe. And by the end, they took the elements of all these different versions that they did to put together the perfect one, finding the soul of that song. So it sounds very much what you just said resonates with that as well.
I think there's also the Tears for Fears record, The Seeds of Love, the one that came out after Songs from the Big Chair. They recorded that entire record, I believe, four times. They recorded it like huge, big budget, scrapped it completely because it wasn't working, went back and did the entire record again, same songs, four times, until finally it was right, and then it became another crazy massive record worldwide.
Mark, were you going to say something?
I was going to ask, just bouncing off this whole thing about the demo and what that looks like these days. Angelo was asking you about going out there with, you know, top-notch quality recordings and productions of your songs and how important that is in today's business. You know, I'm of the mindset where, from what I can see, the days of the acoustic guitar demo on a cassette tape are kind of over. And since it's so cheap to produce top-notch quality stuff these days, more and more artists are coming out with these big productions. And, you know, even if they're indie on a small level, on a small budget, they're coming out with these big recordings. What are your thoughts on that, Rob? Is there any room left for the acoustic demo anymore?
It all depends on the song. It really, really depends on the song. If there's so many people out there, you know, there's a lot of great A&R people. There's a lot of not so great A&R people. No offense to those people. Sorry. But there's a lot of people where if you submit something that's an acoustic guitar demo and a vocal, a lot of them will say, wow, that's a really nice ballad. And you'll be like, no, that's supposed to be an up-tempo. Well, it doesn't sound like an up-tempo. It sounds like an acoustic ballad.
Right.
There's a lot of people that can't see where it's going to go. I find if artists are handing in songs to producers, then it totally works because producers, this is kind of what we do. We listen to songs and we kind of know where these songs can go. We can imagine. I'd almost rather hear a song like that where it's really stripped down than with full production, because then it's kind of already dictating to me, well, this is what the artist wants. But when it comes time to handing in stuff to record labels, you kind of have to go the extra mile. You know, unless if you have, again, that crazy buzz going and you're Tracy Chapman, you know, where it's just you and an acoustic guitar and it sounds unbelievable and it's great and it really, really works. If you're not, though, then you need to hit them with major pizzazz. It's got to sound great. It's got to be sonically amazing.
Right. When I tell artists to send me their stuff, I just tell them it's recorded a cappella, even on their iPhone. You know, all I want to hear is lyric and melody. I don't care about all that other stuff. And that's good for us as people in the business.
But, yeah, for sure. Yeah, that makes sense for you and I, but it's just for anybody else, they really need to get it. They really need to be blown away by what's happening.
Right.
That's just the way it is now. And technology has made it so that everybody has these tools in the palm of their hands. Doesn't mean that it's led to better songs. Still, the song is the most important thing. And if you don't have a great song and you have amazing production, then it's still not a great song.
Right.
Cool. I only have one more question just to wrap it up. I'm interested to hear, Rob, the most proud moment of your career.
Wow. The most proud moment of my career. I was working at Alliance Atlantis, and I was there as an animator. Alliance Atlantis doesn't exist anymore. They're now Shaw Communications. But they took us out for this team-building exercise. They brought us to this place up near Yorkville Mall, and we were all on go-karts, just, you know, driving around, and the radio was playing. And this was right as my first single hit radio. It was 2003. And I was still working as an animator, just waiting for this single to drop and just really excited about this. And so there we were go-karting, and my song came on the radio. And I just stopped the car in the middle of the track and stood up with all these cars buzzing around me. And it was about a week later, I quit. And, you know, just really fully forged right ahead. head into music. And I'll never forget that moment. That was a pretty mind-blowing experience.
Well, that's a really cool note to leave us on, Rob. I really appreciate that story and appreciate you having us interview you and being on our podcast.
Yeah, Rob, thanks so much. I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person, and thanks again for being on the podcast.
It's my absolute pleasure. You guys are great to talk with.
Thank you for listening, and remember, if you did enjoy this interview, come on down to the workshop with Rob Wells on December 7th. Whether or not you have a song that you want critiqued, we have VIP tickets for those that do want to have their song critiqued by Rob Wells and Mark Zubek. So if you use the discount code PODCAST at the checkout, you'll get $25 off either ticket, whichever you choose. And if you purchase before October 15th, you're also going to get access free to our social media workshop, How to Triple Your Fan Base in 90 Days Using Social Media. Now, we did initially sell out of the VIP tickets very quickly, but we've talked to Rob. We are going to be releasing another batch of VIPs, so get them quickly before they're gone. They went super fast the first time. This is a really cool opportunity to have an incredible songwriter producer with multi-platinum credits under his belt give you some tips on how to improve your music. So with that, thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.